Start
6:30 p.m.
Directly. Mike's on. Let's rock and roll.
Let's talk. Okay. All right.
Hello. How are you? Good afternoon. Good morning. Good evening. Wherever you are in the known universe listening to this broadcast live or this podcast. Again, we want to thank you for joining us for another edition of Synergy. Again, I'm Dr. Keelan Henson, and we have Pastor Joseph Hill. Is it okay if I call you Joseph?
Yeah, it makes folks think I'm smart.
You are. I mean, we have to say Joseph. Joseph Hill, Pastor Joseph Hill. And again, we are here. Synergy is a show that deals with religion, spirituality, consciousness, altered states of consciousness, and everything else in between. Okay? For those that would like to participate, get on Podbean and send us questions and comments live at mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com. That's mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com. Or you can send us questions at synergykhjh@gmail.com. That's synergykhjh@gmail.com. Okay. So again, as we always say, you know, for those that may be listening, you could have been anywhere, but you're here with us. And again, all conversations are based around spirituality. And again, we like to stress not Christianity, just spirituality in general, religion, consciousness, altered states of consciousness, everything else in between. So today, and I see I had a typo in our topic there. Today, our topic today, we felt like riding this free will wave. Okay? So the question that we posted was, is fate determined or can we choose our destiny? Okay? Is free will a real thing? You know, what is it? Is that what separates us from animals, or are we just like animals? You know, I made the statement on the last show that the only thing that separates us from animals is, from a cognitive standpoint, is our ability to think about tomorrow. Your ability to make plans. Other than that, a lot of who we are and a lot of what we do is based in evolution. A lot of it is etched in our DNAs. In our DNA. That's one perspective. So again, we're here to try to figure out what control, if any, we have over our lives. Do we have any control of our lives, or is everything predestined and it's just, again, you know, peace and blessings to the Bryant family?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, if it's just meant to be that on a certain day at a certain time, it's just time for me to go, I'm gonna go. So what say you, Pastor Joe? What do you think?
Well, I've been over here chuckling. If y'all hear me, I apologize. Me and Keelan actually started a conversation before we went on air that was close to free will, but a little bit different direction that I really want to get into. But
we can go there.
We posted this. Let's play with it and see if we can sneak around to it.
Okay.
Free will. I want to back it out from circumstances, because you're talking about, like, you know, the issue with the, you know, with the helicopter crash. That's kind of irrelevant from, or second, what's the word? Distant from free will, because that's just people making choices. It didn't happen because people made choices. Circumstances, environmental, haphazard things happened. But free will, your ability to choose or not choose to do this thing or that thing. You know, when you said the part about being separated from animals, by our ability to I guess be abstract, make plans, etc., it still occurred to me, you know, what I thought was something be interesting to talk about today in terms of consciousness, how often, even in our planning and our you know, planning what we're going to do with our lives, being what we may think of as proactive or imaginative, how much of that is still often, when we're not self-aware enough, still just being reactive to stimuli, which is what animals do.
Yeah.
We have more complicated minds that process a larger degree of stimuli, maybe. But how easy it can be for a person to still run through all of life just based on reacting to stimulus.
Yeah.
I can make a decision at 44 based on the impact of stimulus of some experience that happened to me when I was 6, 5, 10, 13, yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
So I don't know, that caught me as you tried to make that comparison. The fact that even with our higher functioning minds, if you will, still very often we're still functioning in response to stimuli.
Yeah.
So I want to use that to run into this other conversation we had. We don't have to, but we're saying, for example, how we may read or take somebody's response to us could be entirely different from what they intended.
Yeah.
And really the way they even came at you may be entirely different from what they intended in their mind as they were putting together their response and their intention.
Yeah.
But how they come out, how you perceive and then process what they said, all that is influenced by, I won't say infinite, but definitely hard to count, number of stimuli, experiences from each of your pasts,
yeah,
that influence how you take the moment you're in. And that makes my head hurt.
But yeah. that's, so I teach a cinema psychology class. Yesterday, it's funny we're talking about this. So this is how it happened.
See, I told you this is how it happened. We don't have to stay on that, but I was like, oh, that's too much fun not to talk about. Because it's real stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I showed King Kong.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't show the whole movie. I just showed King Kong climbing the building with the lady in his hand.
Yeah.
And then I asked him, what do you see?
Yeah.
And what is King Kong about, and what do you see?
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I talked about fears of interracial dating. King Kong and,
oh, wow,
and white woman. Big, and then, you know, monster. He gets shot at the end, and yeah, climbing Empire State Building, and Jack Johnson, and how the United, yeah, States made laws against, you know, they made that law, taking white women across state lines for immoral purposes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how?
Wow.
And somebody else, like, people of color saw that, and then somebody else couldn't. And
right,
the question,
right,
is, how our experiences and who we are,
yeah,
can paint and shape what we see in movies and how we interpret the world.
Yeah.
How we can all see the same thing.
Right.
But like you said, how our past experiences, how culture, how communities, how families, how all these things come together to sort of influence how we think about the world and how we think about ourselves and how we think about our, yeah, place in the world. Like, a lot of times, I say all the time, there is no right or wrong in life.
Yeah.
There is only perspective.
True.
And our jobs are hopefully to as best as we can, understand someone else's perspective, how they saw it from their side, yeah, of the table.
Yeah.
Tell you how I see it, and then try to understand, give integrity to how you see it. And giving, right, integrity doesn't mean I have to agree with you. It just means I understand, yeah, you see it from a different perspective, and figure out where can we meet in the middle to make sure that everybody is comfortable or happy or whatever the case may be. But that's a good point, this notion or idea of how all of our experiences build the way we see the world.
Yeah.
And there might not always be a cut and dry right or wrong.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, it's funny, because just think about that certain scenario. You could use that with the movie or any number of situations where I see one thing and I go, oh, you're trying to signify this.
Yeah.
Whether or not I have in me the ability to give you enough benefit of the doubt to at least allow us to have a conversation where you can tell me that you had some other intention.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think the problem we get into a lot with that kind of situation, whether it's racism, homophobia, sexism, if you are in the class that experiences oppression, microaggressions, offense, insecurity in the larger society, whatever it is, when you have so many cumulative experiences, number one, it's hard to get that benefit of the doubt because you have had your hypothesis in your head proven and reproven and reproven.
Yeah.
And so number one, it's hard enough to get somebody benefit of the doubt, or even in a one-on-one relationship that hasn't had great experiences even. Mm-hmm. But then it's also hard if I say, I'm going to try and give you the benefit of the doubt and I hear your side. And then I got to, yeah, I hear you, but I'm still thinking it's this other thing.
Yeah.
And then to think about too, for that person who says that was not my intent or my perspective. How do you get that person potentially to look at how they did it and go, oh, hey, maybe that did influence
come out wrong. Yeah.
Maybe somewhere in the back of my head, think about my upbringing as a white person in the midst of interracial relationship propaganda, did have this influence in my idea, this big black monster kidnapping this white woman and trying to get away with her.
Yeah.
Maybe it did. Who wants to face that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? if you weren't overt about it, if you had to recognize that something that potentially ugly, so to speak, is dug into the back of your being somewhere, who wants to face that? But I would like, well, shouldn't like to think, I think that for a lot of us, if not all of us, there are influences in our past experiences that make us react prejudiciously toward some other somebody, some other group. In ways that we're not aware of because we don't do it consciously.
Yeah.
I may not think I'm, you know, I don't want to stay on black and white, but, you know, just out of experience, you know, maybe you don't think there's anything especially racist about your great fear of driving through an inner city neighborhood when you're in a car that's in motion. But yeah. You think it's just sensible. But I don't know. Maybe you think I'd be silly for driving through some rural backwoods place with no lights at night and being afraid to stop at that gas station because everybody's wearing camouflage and has rifles in the back of their car and they all, you know, wearing plaid and beards. Well, you might think that's racist and stupid, but some of my life history experience and shared experience tells me I'm not sure that's a safe space.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So just all those different influences that come in. So to spin it back to free will, I don't think free will is an illusion, but I think it's difficult to really approach real free will, freedom of choice, clarity of thought, etc., without working to be as aware of as you can of the different influences of your own life that may compel you to choose one way or the other, more so than you actually really making an independent decision. So those internal, external influences are hard to grasp and count.
Last night, we had this conversation about the tragedy with Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
And when sifting through it, what I discovered was that what shook people, I tried to figure out how is it that people feel totally connected to someone that they don't know, they've never met. But most importantly, I wasn't even a big Kobe fan, but for some reason, I felt like I had been kicked in the stomach.
Mm.
And I couldn't figure out why.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, for some people out there, what was it that was playing in the overwhelming response?
Yeah.
And I came to the conclusion that for some people, it made them contemplate determinism. It made them contemplate God.
Mm.
It's kind of like, again, why do good things happen to bad people?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it made them wonder, like, if he can get it, any of us can get it. Like,
right.
Like, it was just, I mean, I just...
But isn't that just true, but doesn't what that unsettles people? Because that statement is what's disturbing. If that could happen to him, it could happen to me. Well, didn't you already know that, but you don't think about it on a day-to-day? It's the kind of thing that throws it back in your face.
It again... It,
I could get hit by a bus or a car going back to my car when the show's over. I know that's somewhere back in my head, but I don't keep it front of my consciousness unless
Do my actions matter? Again, determinism. Is my fate determined? Do my actions matter? This man is an ambassador for women. Like, it made people question.
Well, grab this.
Why
grab
am
this.
I trying? Like, grab this. Why am I, think about it, determinism. Like, why am I even trying to be good?
There's a
if,
word.
If I'm going to be good and I'm still going to die in a plane crash, if I'm still going to get run over on my way walking to church,
yeah.
Why try?
Well, I guess part of that could be, you could say this. I'm going to die. It might be today. Might be tomorrow. So I could say, well, screw it, I ain't doing nothing. Or I could say, with the time I have left, let me impact something. Let the time I have matter. So could you say, man, did anything Kobe did matter? Because he still died. Well, I promise you, all of us are going to die. But if we all took that mode and therefore said nothing matters, we could just sit in the house and eat tomato soup until we die.
The point of doing these good deeds, though, is I hope I'm buying myself some time.
Is it though? Does it have to be that?
Of course, for most, I think for some people, that is a part of how we're taught. I think that's a part of the foundation is that we're taught and we're believed if we do good deeds that we will reap good deeds back. And a part of the good deeds that we will reap back is a long, healthy life. Well, if I'm going to be good to all these folks out here and I'm still going to get sick, and my wife still gonna cheat on me and leave me, and then my cousin gonna die in a car crash. What am I here trying for?
Well, that's a good question.
I think that some people feel like, why try?
You could say from that standpoint, if it's not gonna make my life somehow better, why bother? But I would like to hope Kobe's motivation or somebody's motivation out there in the world is more about the impact their actions can have on the person's life that they're doing something for. I guess you could look at it in terms of, do I want benefit? Do I want significance as far as the life I live? Did it matter to somebody? Mm-hmm. Or beyond that, or do I just want the well-being of others? Which seems like something. I said, man, you must be crazy. But I think there are other ways to think about, did it matter? What's the difference? Then what's my own long-term payoff? Because that's not really goodness. That's just selfishness. That's like putting money in the bank. It's not good when I put money in the bank. I just want to get, when I invest in the stock market, that's not goodness. I just want to get a return on my investment.
Exactly.
Likewise with your time, your gifts, your effort in life. And again, many different spiritual pathways adhere to this idea that the purpose of my life is to make purpose with the life I have, no matter how long or short it's going to be.
That's an interesting statement. Is the purpose of my life to find, when people say when I hear people say find my purpose, it sounds like I am meant to do something, and it is my job to figure out what that specific thing is, or is it my job is to make purpose?
Yeah.
Is it there's a skill, as an example, there's a skill that I'm good at. I have to figure out what it is and do that thing.
Yeah.
Or is it my job, everything is a blank slate, and my job is through discovery to learn how to do something so I can be of some use to myself and to other people around me? Which do you think it is?
Well, that's what utilitarian society would have you think of as the value. What good are you to the rest of the world? What skill, what benefit do you bring? What cog can you be in the machine?
Yeah.
I was actually talking to a friend of mine about the premise, and we hear this and you kind of nod at it when you see it on Facebook, but I think it's good to think about some distinction between what you do and who you are. Hmm. I think sometimes when folks say, I'm trying to find my purpose, they want the whole broad life definition of what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Well, damn, that's a lot. and anybody who's lived any amount of time knows you may think it at 13, 20, 25, 30, I've got my purpose. And then you get into that thing. I think the problem is, We think altruistically.
Hold on, before I lose this thought.
Yeah.
I think what the problem is this notion that we say, and you can touch on it later, yeah. this notion, this idea that we say everybody has a gift.
Yeah.
So that everybody has a gift or something that they're good at.
Yeah.
And I think that that puts me in place to look for something
right.
that I'm good at, as opposed to just sort of developing something that I'm good at. But
yeah.
anyway, go ahead.
Well, dang, you made me lose it.
Oh, my bad. Well, I mean,
my working theory on that is if you lose it, it wasn't worth keeping. So it's all right. Don't worry about it. I lost it.
But I lose stuff a lot easier than you. So that's why I wanted to say that before.
But that's my standard rule, because I forget stuff and I go, if I forgot it, some other part of my brain must have decided, eh, I don't need that.
My bad.
But no, not at all. Not at all. But the this going back to this idea of,
again, which
I've
is
got
it?
This gift, I've got this skill. Either that's, I'm going to spend my whole life doing that thing, or I got some of my life trying to figure out what it is. And so another point of thought about this then is the value of you in the universe something you can do, or is it just you by fact?
Yeah.
So when I think about purpose, I can think about it grand scale, next 40, 50 years of my life in a job, or I can think about in the next moment, can I do something in some way for myself or somebody else that makes things, at least by whatever my life has taught me, makes yeah. things a little better for somebody.
Yeah.
In other words, let's suppose I decide my purpose is I'm a doctor. Okay. That's what I do. Okay. So I'm on my way to my office as a doctor because that's what I do. That's my purpose. And on the way, you know, there's a dude beating his wife on the side of the road. And I'm like, wow, that's messed up. But I'm not a social worker. I'm a doctor. I got to get to the office to do my purpose. you know, yeah. but that's dramatic. But in any given encounter with any other person, or as I deal with myself, I think about the idea of doing purpose moment by moment, experience by experience, and how when you live that way, the potential to then look back and go, oh, that's what was going on. And there's like this whole tapestry of ways that yeah. you impact the world around you without having a certain job or using a certain skill. You know, you may find ways to say, I've got a certain skill or a certain gift. I can leverage that to do some good somewhere, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, I know folks who don't seem to have any particular skill or gift set, but they're very generous, very philanthropic. You know, hear that on a radio show every day, philanthropic. you know, that's one thing. Yeah, I think the idea of purpose, I think when we get it so grounded, as life teaches us to in career or a particular thing you do, yeah. I think you, by doing that, miss what any given moment might offer you that has nothing to do with a grander scheme,
yeah.
at least doesn't appear to. But sometimes when you look back, it's only then you get a clear picture of your grand scheme, which may be 15 million random things you did that helped 15 million different people have some yeah. better positive experience of life, at least for a moment while you were passing through.
Yeah. Maybe as we compare, we think that our purpose should mirror other people's purpose.
Oh, sure.
And we compare someone who has this overwhelming skill.
Yeah.
Like some comedian, and that's the thing he does,
right.
or the thing she does, or some doctor, that's the large thing that they do, and we feel like we should have some grandiose skill of some sort.
Yeah.
And if we don't have this like one amazing, this huge amazing thing that is hugely impactful, we feel like we fall short. And part of the issue is we continue to compare our purpose to other people's purpose.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe if we continue to do that, we will always fall short.
Oh, we'll always fall short. You'll always be unhappy.
You're a millionaire.
Yeah.
Man, but he got 10 million. He got 10 million. He got 100 million.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you continue to compare yourself to other people,
yeah.
you put yourself in a position to always feel like you're inadequate.
You're always
or you're not enough, or it's never
yeah.
enough, or something
it's,
like that.
It's maybe. A prescription for unhappiness. Kind of random, but telling. I remember back during the last stock market crash, they were talking about some millionaire, wasn't a billionaire, millionaire, killed himself because of all the losses that he had.
Yeah.
But at the end of the losses, this dude still had like $100 million.
Man.
But because he lost like two or three, That really sucks, mind you. But you'd have to work so hard to spend $100 million before you died, you know?
Yeah.
But to him, this was such a tragedy that he killed himself.
Yeah.
Because he had this other measure of what it meant to be happy or complete or successful. Well, you have $100 million.
Yeah.
But because that's not your measure, I mean, that's what happens. Whether that, and you can take that down to the small scale, because you got a Ford and don't have a Honda.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. If you're always needing and looking at someone else as a measure of who you're supposed to be, that's rough. But we spend all of our developing years being offered these different models of what good people are, looking up to this person, looking up to that person, celebrating this person. And so we end up taking those as our measures. I want to run back to something with Kobe that I thought was interesting to think about. I feel like, because it happens, I want to talk about this idea of connection, because helicopter crash, okay, Kobe Bryant, oh my goodness, and not to knock that, but when I think about that, and this is me, maybe this is other folks too, if I hear on the news something that starts with tragedy, my next thing I'm listening for is where.
Yeah.
Or who. And if I can't find some means of personal connection to the where or who, not that I don't care, but that story registers completely differently in my mind than if it's hometown or where I'm from, or, oh, that's so-and-so's mom or dad, or some celebrity that the media has, you know, inserted into my consciousness.
Yeah.
Whole different conversation right there.
Yeah.
Because what is this ownership that we take for celebrities? Because I don't know, personally, if Kobe was like my close relative, my husband, my dad, I might be aggravated at all these folks that don't know my husband or my dad, saying, I'm going to miss him. He's, you don't know my husband.
Yeah.
I mean, on one hand, it's like, oh, that's sweet. But then I'm like, you know what? This is personal.
Yeah.
But what is the ownership that we take over people in the celebrity limelight? But back to the other idea of we put folks in front of people as measures.
Yeah.
Which sets you up in the back end of your life to keep doing that.
Yeah.
Instead of looking at you.
Yeah. That's the issue, I think.
Yeah.
So back to the original question. Do we have control? Or is this all predestined? Because if it's predestined, why the hell am I going to try? Why should I work? Why should I try? What stops me from saying... What stops me from living a life of self-gratification?
Nothing.
Like, if I'm still going to die in a plane crash, if at the end of the day I'm going to die 50 years old, you know, walking to church or walking to the mosque or, you know, walking to the food pantry, if there's a date that the universe is going to punch my ticket,
right?
Tell me, to the person that's out there listening that's saying this, tell them why they should try. Do you think they should continue to try to be a good person? Why should they continue to try to make anybody else's life better if everything could just be taken from them in a moment's notice anyway?
Well, first of all, that's going to happen.
Wait.
So that's going to happen.
I forgot.
So
we never answered the question of, we got to first answer the question of, what do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think it's determined? Do you think it's not? Or do you think it's a little both, or what?
Let me try to do that quick, and I'm never good at this, but I think... Without self-awareness, even when you think you are making independent choices, it is, if not predestined, it is certainly a life you're living that is largely not within your own hands. I think predestined, I want to think that means someone had a plan back here when they influenced me this way and that way, which they may have.
Yeah.
Maybe my vote is predestined if I never think very clearly about the people that are, you know, shopping for my vote.
Yeah.
But to take long term, is every detail pre-planned and worked out? I don't think so. But I do think that while you think you're making free will decisions along the way, you may not be as free as you think you are if you don't understand how, for example, your parents' treatment of you influences your romantic relationships, or past romantic relationships influence your romantic relationships, or if you don't realize how that bullying incident in third grade still makes you want to flare up on somebody when you're 40.
Yeah,
you think you're doing free will, but you are really, to some degree, recycling your past. So, but the other thing then, why bother? If I know the universe is going to punch my ticket on day whatever, or if I don't know, but I know my ticket's going to get punched, why bother?
Yeah.
I guess it depends on how you answer for yourself this question. When you die, and people say your name, let's skip afterlife and all that stuff. When you die and people say your name, do you want that to matter? When you die, or before you die, really, while you're still living your life, when you look back over your impact on this world, do you want to see something that feels good inside your own heart, or do you not care? If you don't care, go crazy. Do your own thing. You may as well. If you don't care about looking back at your life and feeling like it was worth something to somebody else, go nuts. If you want to live your life and not care when folks say your name later, whether they're cursing you or don't know who the hell you are, like nobody anywhere, go nuts. If you don't want something decent to be able to be said without a lie at your funeral, don't want nobody to show up, go nuts. I mean, real talk. I mean, it's your ticket will get punched.
I had a preacher tell me once that all pastors are liars. And I said, what do you mean by that? He said, because we all at some point or another have to ask the great creator to forgive us, because we all have to stand over people's body and say they lived a life that they never did just so the family can rest easy.
Well,
and I never forgot that.
I can't say I've never had to nuance that dance very carefully. I volunteered to do a funeral once because the funeral home didn't have anybody else. When I showed up, don't know anybody, because nobody called me before to give me like a rundown on the person's life to kind of reflect things back, etc.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing a crash course like an hour before the funeral. First person comes up to me is this person's child who says, "Oh, I'm glad you're here. I'm trying to make sure I don't say too much. I'm glad you're here. My other panel will be here in a minute to tell you all the things not to talk about during the eulogy." It's like, wow, that's a rough life when they give you a list of what not to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of pastors do that, and you can wax around it. I can be gently honest about you and then think about the mercy of the universe as I've experienced thus far in my living life. But one of my logics is, knowing my own resume in my life, that if I can have a sense of peace and forgiveness for myself, that feels real and true to me, that must be there for anybody.
Yeah.
Whether that's on this side of life, or if there's something after you die, if it's on that side of life, if it's the same universe, the same energy, the same God, as many breaks as he's cut me down here, I figured, I don't know. I don't know if that, I wonder about how final that is, but that's a different show, and I don't want to pull back into that. But yeah. But I think, yeah, the real question, though, becomes, why should it matter if I know my car is getting punched? Because it is getting punched.
It's all determined.
So,
why can't?
So why does it matter? I'm not living forever. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to get sick. Some tragedy in the rules and laws of the dynamics of life are going to befall me at some point. So if that's going to happen no matter what I do, why bother doing any good? And the bottom line question is whether you value goodness.
Good point.
If you don't value goodness, or to be more selfish, you don't care what anybody thinks about you when you die, or what you think about yourself as you look back on the impact of your life, if you don't care about those things legitimately, yeah, go play video games.
Yeah.
Go to the casino. Blow it. Trick is, if I blow it all today and my ticket don't punch, I got to figure out tomorrow.
Then you got to figure
out.
But
real talk.
You survive.
Yeah. Like, damn. Oh, buddy, and I got my date wrong. I bought all these credit cards on December 25th of 1999, and Y2K didn't hit. All my debt still shows up on the computers.
I think... Let me ask you that question real quick. This notion, idea of is determinism. I'll tell you something that makes, and maybe it's all by accident, but something that I can see that can make someone feel like all this is determined is this.
Yeah.
No one chooses to be born where they're born.
Right.
Where you can't choose your family. You can't choose, like, the fact that people are born in America.
Yeah.
Will probably influence your religion.
Oh, surely.
Like,
it'll also influence your mortality.
Yeah. Like, if you were born, like, you may be a Christian today, but if you were born in the Middle East,
you'd be a good, dedicated Muslim, probably. You'd be
a Muslim. So, yeah. The notion or idea that we all are born and exist where we are, nobody, like, you're born to a poor family.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That sets in motion a whole lot of other, that sets in motion a lot of circumstances. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That influence, that greatly influence who you are.
Yeah.
Who, that greatly influence who you are, who you potentially could become.
Which opportunities and what can, you, can't what be.
Your,
yeah.
Yeah, for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can see how people will go, I don't have any control over this.
Yeah.
If I did, I wouldn't have chosen to be born to a father who would molest me. I wouldn't be chosen to be born in poverty. I wouldn't have been chosen to be born in the Middle East. I wouldn't have been chosen to be born in the South. I wouldn't have been chosen to be born in the 60s where black people didn't have any rights or whatever. So yeah. Obviously, God put me here and he put me in these circumstances for a specific reason.
That's one way to think about it.
I think that's how some people maybe
that gets preached. And there's a shadier side to that would suggest to you possibly quit trying.
Yeah.
You know, quit fussing about a caste system or quit fussing about socioeconomic status. You must be where you're supposed to be because that's where you at.
Yeah.
Now, the God thing with where you're born. I had a young man once, got a girl pregnant. And he said to me, do you think this is a God thing? I said, well, did you have sex? He said, yes. I said, were you wearing protection? He got kind of awkward and said, no. I said, that's why you're having a baby. You know, if you and your girl were fell asleep and didn't do nothing and woke up and she had
immaculate
was pregnant.
Conception.
Okay, God did that. Why is someone born into situation X? Because man and woman in situation X had sex. And you know, I don't want to be too vulgar here, but they did not do anything preventive,
yeah,
to keep the bodies from doing what bodies are typically do when you have sex without some type of interference. They conceive children.
Yeah,
you were born there because two people who preceded you in that same circumstance had sex and had a baby.
And you just lost the spiritual monopoly. Is that it? Why couldn't I have been born to Prince Charles or Prince whoever? Like, how did I lose the spiritual monopoly? Why did I have to be born to this family? So obviously, because specifically I was born to this family. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the,
yeah,
that's obviously the train of thought.
Oh, sure.
The what's interesting is reincarnationists,
yeah,
people who believe in reincarnation,
mm-hmm,
which is interesting. They say that you choose that path and you choose these people before you get here.
That's not what all of them say. But yeah, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of them say that they, so like.
Because caste is a reincarnation. You don't get no say. You just, whatever, however your life worked out, you know, the universe decides where you're going
to
land.
Yeah, a lot of it is, some people say a lot of it's connected to karma.
Yeah.
I've heard that. And,
but I know some
people that who believe in reincarnation believe.
It's like Airbnb. Like, oh, that looks like a nice, yeah.
No, you don't always set up a nice scenario.
Yeah.
You choose, they say that you choose, before you get here, you choose this life and you choose those that you choose to come down with.
Huh.
You choose your parents and you choose those that you have major interactions with. And you choose the trials and tribulations and pain. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying this is a perspective.
Yeah.
You choose the trials, tribulations, and pain you go through. So this time around, the reason that you continue to reincarnate is so you can grow and learn. So you can grow, learn, and evolve spiritually, right?
Yeah.
So I say, well, this time I want to learn humility. Or this time I want to learn. Or this time I want to learn how to deal and overcome pain. So I'm going to say, Joe, we in the afterlife now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going back down. I want you to go back down with me, okay? I'm going to go back down as a woman. I want you to come back down as a man.
Yeah.
At some point, we're going to find each other. We're going to get married, and I want you to beat me.
Okay.
I mean, as an extreme example.
Yeah.
And you say, now knowing this is how much you love me.
Right.
Knowing that a small part of that, there's going to be some karmatic yeah. stuff that you got to deal with. You love me enough to say, I'll come down and help you so you can learn that lesson.
Yeah.
So in this philosophy, the people who hurt you the most in this life are people who usually love you the most.
That's some bullshit.
Because they help. Look, now this is your first time hearing it. You can't call it bullshit.
That is some abuser shit right there, man. Baby girl.
No. But just,
you asked me to do it.
No, okay.
Let's walk it through, though.
I'm not saying I believe it. It's a perspective.
I didn't mean to devalue the perspective. I'm thinking of all the harm it does. But okay, let's hold the perspective objectively. Okay.
No, but not just with that.
Yeah.
Being born into poverty or something like that. You choose to have some of these experiences so you can learn a lesson which will help you grow spiritually and emotionally. So your whole track, your whole life, you set these things along the path so you can have these experiences with people, so you can learn, reflect, and grow, so you can give yourself the opportunity.
Yeah.
Now, when you get here, you forget that you set this up for yourself.
Well, that's...
And maybe you will learn a lesson and maybe you won't, which in which case, when you die, you got to go back and go, oh, that's what that was about. I got to go back and do it again.
Or I could say, you know what? I messed that up. I'm just going to chill. I'm going to stay here. I'm just going to stay imperfect and stay up here or on the golf course, whatever the afterlife is. I will just live with my disappointment in myself.
Well, in theory, you can't make that decision to stay. You got to keep going until you evolve. But what do you think about the idea and notion? And this is a real philosophy.
I think
set up. You make these choices and you choose to go through some of these experiences for the sole purpose of hoping those tragedies and trials help you grow and evolve spiritually, mentally, and emotionally.
Two things. First one, that's what I hear underneath all that is another version of that need we have for self-control. Uh-huh. I picked this life. But the other thing is, now this, let me see if I can get this out, because I never thought about this. This is what I like this stuff, because you get an interesting train of thought. Let me try and verbalize this well. The you that comes back here, right, uh-huh. comes as a blank slate. There may be some clues back in your residual spirit, but
we don't know that.
Yeah, but you come back at two and you don't go, okay, I hope that beacon comes from my dad when I'm three so I can learn something.
Yeah, the you that comes here has no idea.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And so technically, the you before, my one question I feel in my spirit is, what gives you the right to decide who this, because this you, this other you, it's kind of not you.
Yeah.
That makes my head hurt a little bit. But this is a whole, although it's your spirit, you may say, that is a whole different life than the life you just lived. Who you were making those decisions is one expression of you. This is a whole new you.
Yeah.
So what gives you the right to decide what that life needs because of what you wish you had?
Well, you're not deciding what their life needs. You're deciding what you need.
Yeah, but those,
you have to go
but
through
those
that
decisions.
Experience so
well,
that
that's what I'm saying.
Needs.
You're setting up the theme park, so to speak, for this new life.
Yeah.
Based on what you wish you'd figured out on your last one.
Yeah.
So that takes some nerve. I wish I got this right. So when this new life starts, technically it's still my soul. It's still me, but it's a new life. I'm going to put these things, I'm going to plan these things to happen in the Haunted House theme park
I
of
think
life.
That's where. That's the incongruency between what you believe and that perspective. It's not a new life.
Yeah.
It's you. It's not something new. It's you.
But it's
just you all over again.
But it's a new you.
No, it's just you all over again. It's not a new you. That's just another coat.
No.
You just got the spirit
is
inside.
Is it a new coat, though? Because check this out. To what degree, when I say me or you,
yeah.
To what degree does that little pronoun all by itself mm-hmm. contain as part of who you are in this life everything you specifically experienced in this life? That's a part of who you are.
Yeah.
That does not come with you into this new round. At least not any way that you can consciously access and add to the learning experience.
I think from that perspective it does.
How?
It is where I mean, think.
What do I get to access as this newborn, as this toddler, as this?
I know a lot about it. I just read anything, and then I've heard people talk about it. And I've read a lot of stuff about it. People say it's how they explain away how some people just have gifts. Like how could Mozart write music at two?
Yeah.
Like how do we have these sort of inclinations?
Asperger's. That's my.
Probably so.
Yeah.
But how do people have these inclinations to gravitate towards certain gifts,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Yeah,
we bring, in theory, some people say we bring that stuff over from life to life to life. Mm. You continue to bring some of that stuff over.
Yeah,
but I think, but again, I digress.
But I'm still not that, me. Huh? I'm still not me from the last life. If me means all of the experiences and influence that shaped who I was when that life finished, I may bring something over.
Hold on. For those that are entering into the chat room, we appreciate you. Again, we're debating the idea of life. Is life determined or not? And we're just sort of debating the idea of reincarnation and the notion of idea that do people bring stuff? If reincarnation were true, is it possible for people to bring stuff over from life to life to life? And the life that you have, is it determined because not because some abstract God set it up, but you set up these trials and tribulations so you could learn and grow and evolve? So if you have any opinions about those, please type those things in. Mastered myself, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate it. Thank you. And if any of you guys have any opinions, let us know what you think. You know what I mean? And again, we're just interested in sort of teasing apart the nuances of all these different perspectives on reincarnation, on how Christianity looks at the afterlife, how reincarnation looks at the afterlife, how Islam looks at the afterlife. Whatever your perspectives are, you know, please let us know. But go ahead.
Well, my thought was I don't want to. I'm almost hesitant to take this too far because I feel like we're kind of arguing with a straw man, because a person who's versed in this, that's their system, isn't here to talk about it for themselves. You know what I mean? So I don't want to go too far in that and kind of pick at somebody else's system. But I do hear in it that sense of self-control. It simultaneously tries to get rid of two of our anxieties. The sense that there's no, I don't have any control over my circumstances. That's one. But then the anxiety some folks have then of, what do I do with this apparent model of God or divinity that did this?
So it's not the.
So let me remove that God and address the control issue by saying it's me. I set this up. And maybe it's just
is it not the idea? So you're not against the idea of reincarnation, or you haven't addressed that yet? It's not the idea of reincarnation. It's the idea that you're doing it. The idea that you set your own path that you are in contention with right now.
Yeah, no, I'm not necessarily debating reincarnation. I'm asking questions of this particular system.
Yeah.
And I've always tried to, when I think about reincarnation, limited as my learning about it is when I start this new life, it's square one. I might be bringing some residual something back with me.
Yeah.
But I'm not self-aware at this moment in the new life as the person who finished that last life.
Yes.
So I'm not sitting there in my baby crib thinking to myself, man, I can't wait to get to 5 and that dude beats me up, or my first kiss at 7 or 8. I don't know any of that. I'm just going to go through a preset set of conditions
that you make the right decisions.
But this dude right here, he don't have no hopes. This square one dude is starting this new life.
From a deep structure spiritual level, and from when you set this path, you're hoping, I'm going back down, and I hope I make the right decisions so I can grow. Because if I don't, I got to go through this shit all over again.
But that's what you said before you came down. When you came back down and went back to square one, you have no hopes.
You know nothing.
Yeah,
that's the point, though.
So I'm saying for this life now, I'm making a philosophical distinction between this life and the last life. I've set up this set of obstacles or even positive things. Uh-huh. As a fully formed, life-shaped person, that I, now disrobed of all that at square one, am going to go through. And as this new person, I don't have any hopes or plans. I'm just rerunning a track that a previous me set for myself.
And the problem with that is what? You haven't said what's the problem with that.
Well, it's in my mind, as I think about it, for this new life, this life right here.
The new reincarnated you.
I didn't ask for none of that.
But what does that have to do with the purpose of it? Just because you didn't ask for it.
That was your purpose. That's not mine. I'm a square one dude right now.
You keep continuing to talk about the reincarnated you as it's something separate and unique
because
and a different person.
What I'm saying is, I think I'm saying that because personhood is not just about This is my name, or I'm a soul. It's I'm a soul who is a synthesis of all of these. It's not just a coat I put on and on. By the end of my life, whatever my life is, I am now a synthesis of all these experiences and relationships and lessons and bumps and bruises and highs and lows. And now those things are no longer part of the makeup of this person. This is.
I see where the separation comes from now.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
It's an idea of what you think a person is, I guess, or what a soul is.
I think from that perspective, the issue is that your spirit, from this philosophical, whatever this perspective, your spirit is a synthesis of all the experiences you have.
Yeah.
And it's not attached to your body. So when you die, all of those experiences are still attached to that spirit. And when you reincarnate, they're still attached to that new you in that new body. All of those experiences are still there. And then you have new experiences and those get attached. And then you die and then you come back again. All of those, you're a sum total of all of those experiences constantly in theory.
But that's not really synthesis in the sense I'm thinking, because they may be attached, but they're not at hand for me to integrate into who I am
They're not at hand for you to integrate consciously.
So as I experience myself then, I'm still a whole different person.
Consciously.
Yeah. But that's how
but we have to, but this gets into a whole, we need to write this
down. Well, that's what I mean. It's a tangle, man. It's fascinating to think about.
Hold on. We got a call. You want to take this call real quick?
Yeah, may as well.
Okay, we got a call.
Maybe they know more about this than we do. Let's see if we're grasping.
Let's see if we can get you in. See if we can. Hold on 1 second. Hello,
Maliki.
Is it Maliki?
I'm guessing. If I butchered your name, you can fuss at me when you come on. I don't think we hear you though. You want to try and call? Well, we got someone else coming in. Maliki, try and give us a call back in though, man. Sorry about that.
Master, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys. Can you hear me?
Hang on. I think you're on, but
okay. Okay, I think we can hear you now. Hello.
Yeah, you can hear me?
Yes. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, man. I was just tuning in, man. I'm loving it. I'm loving the topic that you guys decided to address on this beautiful day, man. So I was actually listening. You guys sound like you guys are on the same level of consciousness or the same road of knowledge that I've been going on for about the last 9 years. And I just found it very interesting. So I just wanted to pitch in on the conversation if I could, you know, if I could be a guest of honor or something.
Come on, man. Yeah, please. It's your show.
You know, definitely be an honor to just pitch in with you guys and build, you know, because I'm all about building. You know?
Yeah.
Please. So, yeah, let us know your perspective. Again, we're talking about, is this all predestined? How do you feel about reincarnation? Do you choose the people that you come back with? Like, did you lay this path and these trials and tribulations so you can learn and grow and evolve? Just whatever your thoughts are, let us know.
Okay, well, I'm not really into the whole reincarnation school of thought. You know, I've looked into Hindus. You know, those type of beliefs actually derive from ancient Hinduism.
Yeah.
You know, and I've never really been into that, but I've read the Veda scriptures, you know, and things of that nature. As far as if things are predetermined, you know, we have a saying in English called God's plan.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and I feel as though, yes, I do feel like all of this is part of God's plan. You know, I do feel like we have something in Islam called the divine decree. And that basically just states that everything that you do in this life has to be the will of God, because God is the creator of time. Yeah. So everything is mapped out from beginning to end. And if we're going to go off monotheistic, beliefs, then yes, we would have to agree with the title that, yes, this life is set in stone. You know, it's like it's a script that's already written, how you will impact this world, what you will bring to this world. Will you be a cancer or will you be a light of sunshine? You know, this is things that are already predetermined before you even enter this world. As far as my belief on the whole reincarnation thing, you know, it's a dope concept. I can't lie. You know, it's a very interesting concept, but I feel like we need more knowledge of the human nature and us as human beings before we can say that we're already here and we come back numerous times or this cycle of life. We don't have knowledge. We don't even have as much knowledge as we need to master ourselves while we're here, let alone how can I introduce the concept of when I leave here if I don't even know everything about when I'm here.
That's a weird thought right there, because if you think about while I'm in, while I finish that life and I'm prescribing what I think I need next time,
yeah.
Do I even really know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes my head hurt. Do I really know what else I really need to go through?
We're always talking about when we leave here, but what about when we're here?
There it is.
You know, and I just feel like we spend a lot of, you know, without, you know, you got to value life, you got to value death, because you can't have one without the other. But I feel like people question death and are too curious about death. You know, all that energy we spend trying to find out what happens when we leave here. What is our is our reasoning for being here?
Right.
What is our purpose?
Yeah.
Who are we? You know, and I feel like then when we get those answers, that's when we'll get the answers to the other side. You know, because what is death's purpose if we don't know life's purpose?
Agreed.
You know, how can we're not on that other side yet. We're not on death. We're experiencing life. When we get the answers to life, it's only right that we get the answers to death. You know, and what happens after we leave here. You know, when you go into the ancient beliefs, you know, they do say that life, you know, when you look at the hieroglyphics in Egypt, you look at the Mesopotamian Empire, when you look at these things, you know, they do say that life does not end here, for sure. And just about every religion in the world, you know, every philosophical religion as far as belief and faith that you have, they all say that life does not end here, you know. And it's about, me personally, you know, I get the food from all the religions, you know. I feel like there's truth in every one of them. It's about what's your truth and what's for you to believe, you know. That's where I'm at with those questions.
Let me ask
you know?
real quick before you go. Why do you think it is that people? My thought is that I think about mortality. Last year I got the flu, and it made me think about.
You think about it.
I wonder if
you hit them 40s. Yeah,
I had a knee surgery. Like, I wonder as we see things happen to us throughout life, as we get. I mean, something as simple as getting sick.
Yeah.
Makes us think about mortality. Do you think that that's why we focus on death? Because we see people die around us. We get sick. There are things that we get cut. We hurt ourselves. We get infections.
Absolutely.
Do you think that those things are a reason why we focus on death? Like, why do you think that people are so focused on, like, what is it, like, what do we need to do to make people focus on the here and the now and loving each other and finding our purpose here? Like, what do you think?
To answer your question, you know, Prophet Muhammad, so peace and blessings be upon him, you know, he spoke about death, and one time he was giving a sermon, he spoke about death, and he said that, you know how you just said that we see it every day, and we see it all the time? He said that death is a reminder. It's a reminder to you. It should be a reminder to you, of course, because you see it every day, you know. And as far as that, you know, we're going to go into depths about that. You know, I feel like people question death because there's no answer to it right now.
Right.
You know, like, and it's kind of scary because it's like, whoa, you're telling me that there is life beyond this. There is life beyond this, but I don't know what it is, you know. And I see my grandmother die. I see my grandfather die. I know all these people, you know, in life, you know, you see people who times come before yours. Young, old, death has no age. Death has no face. Death has no preference. It happens to every living thing.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, before we just emphasize on us being humans, everything that has life must die.
Yeah.
Stars.
It's going to happen.
Our sun. Everything that contains life must die.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they are scared. You know, it's natural because you got some religions that say, oh, if you're not good and this, that, if you don't live your life this way, then when you go to the next spot, when you move on to the next scene, that it's not going to be good for you. You know, some pitch fiery hell, some pitch eternal torment, you know, and it's things like that that will make people want to know. And most people come from schools of theologies being forced on them. And it's only natural. Yeah. Like me, I grew up, my father was very spiritual growing up, and my mother was an Orthodox Muslim.
Okay.
So me personally, you know, I grew up my mom's household, so Islam was kind of forced on me, even though I never took it as that.
Right.
As an adult now, and I look on it, and I look back at it, it was forced on me. But it being forced on me made me question a lot, and it made me want to elevate my consciousness. Why do I believe in this? Why is this? The Quran is very, 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 very specific on what happens to the soul after it goes on to the next. And you know, I have great knowledge, and I'd be here for hours if I was talking about that. But there were also different faiths that had different I said, what's the word that I'm looking for? Different perspectives on what happens. And it, some say the complete opposite, you know, like the first monotheistic religion, you know, Judaism. Judaism doesn't talk about a heaven or hell after you leave here.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the Nation of Islam, Elijah, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you know, I'm not a believer of his thought, but he said that heaven or hell is a mindset. It's not a place. It's a mindset. Excuse me. Which makes sense, you know, because if that's the case, then you do have people that have heaven on earth and you have people that are going through hell right at this now. Moment as we're talking. You know, so there's lots of beautiful and there are lots of beautiful perspectives that will make you sit back and say, hold. And then the question, as far as go back to your question, why do people, if I'm telling you this and this person is telling you this, but none of our answers are guaranteed, it's going to create a turmoil in your soul because you want to know these answers.
Exactly.
You know, so you're going to go here for it. You're going to go here. You're going to go here. And that's just your human nature to question. It's one of the things that the higher power has blessed upon us, the ability to question. Animals don't question. They just do. They're instinctive. We have a mind that allows us to want to know things that are beyond us. Death is something that's beyond us. No man in this world could change death. So that means that it's bigger than us as humans.
Yeah.
You know, but we have, we're the only creation that has the mind to actually question the creator.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at, there's only one other being in history that had the mind to question the creator. Do you know who that was? That was Satan. You know, that's the only other creation of God that was, that had the mind to be able to question, you know. And a lot of people, you know, they say that we are made in like God's image, you know, but we're also made in Satan's image. And a lot of people don't know this, you know. Satan was the first form of racism and jealousy in the world.
Wow.
Why didn't he bow? Why didn't he bow to Adam?
Yeah, yeah.
Why didn't he bow to Adam? Because he said, I am better than him.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of that's folks miss that if they just read like canonized text. But yeah, that's in the book of Adam. It's a non-canonical text. And that was Satan's whole beef. It was like, I'm not bowing to these things you made out of mud.
Yeah.
Just because they're in your image. And if that's the case, I'd rather just be in charge.
Yeah.
You know, God says that he made Adam out of mud, out of clay.
Yeah.
But he said that he made Shaitan, he made the devil out of smokeless fire. Now, fire is a way more powerful texture than clay. So if I got all these super strength abilities and this, that, you know, and I look at this creation, and it's like, he's weak.
Yeah.
You know, he's weak, man. Like, what? Look at his, look, like, smoke. And this is like, in the Quran, you know, they have something called the jinn, which means the hitting, that like the hitting species.
Yeah.
And basically said, like, you know, they can take form. This is why you have like what humans would call like demonic possession. They can take the form because smoke can take the form of anything.
Right. Yeah.
So when he was able to assume the position and stature of Adam, he said, this guy is fragile. No, man, I'm not. What? You want me to bow down to this and I could crush him in a blink of an eye? And he said, no, you know, and that's really the biggest form of, you know, that was the first example of racism, but
you,
and that was
also
that was superiority, racial superiority, you know, and it was things like this, you know. So like I said, you know, he was the first one to question things, and as a human being, you know, you're going to have questions throughout this life forever. You will never, and certain answers, you know, you will never get the answer to. And that right there is, we have the mind that we feel as though we can conquer and we can get the answer. And that's why we are where we are with today's civilization, as it being as advanced as it is, because we question. They told us we can never fly. You know, we're in the air now. We got jets. They told us that we couldn't have boats. And in the time of Muhammad, peace be and blessings be upon him, it was said to him that if you were to go to the sea, you were considered a madman. You were crazy. Why would you want to go to the ocean, man? You're crazy. There's nothing good there. Now look at us. We go there for cruises and recreation because we question things, you know?
Yeah, man, that's good stuff. I wanted to grab two things you said. When you talk about that creation story, if folks want to take that and work with that a little bit,
let's get him up. And again, Master Brother, are you calling from the States or where are you calling from?
Yeah, I'm in New Jersey.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay.
New Jersey.
All right, we gonna get you off here. Because we want to see if we can get somebody else on the line real quick, take a couple of other calls before we get off the air. But we want to say, man, we appreciate your energy. We appreciate your perspective, and peace and blessings to you, my brother, wherever you are, okay?
Peace and blessings, man. I will be a regular on this show, man. I followed you, and I will be. It's my first time actually hearing this show, so I will be on. I will be anytime you go live, man. I'll be on, man.
Bet, man. Appreciate it.
We usually on every Friday. Every Friday around 11 o'clock, we usually on.
Peace and blessings. Okay, cool. I'll be here, man. Peace and blessings, brother.
Two things I just want to name, and then we got ready to wrap this up.
Okay, Maliki, if you're still out there, you can go ahead and try to call.
Yeah,
that
man,
second.
Come back in, Malik. Sorry, we lost you, man. In that story, if you want to hold that story, what is it that God or the universe or divinity values apparently about fragility? Uh-huh. The fragility of humanity. Just a question. I'm not going to worry with that. The other thing that came up when he mentioned cancer, and the first thing I thought of was the fact that all cancer is, and we talk about this comes back to earth on the show, all cancer is a cell that doesn't know its purpose.
Yeah.
That's ultimately all it is. It's your cell, it's your body, but it's a cell that for some reason the genetics got glitched. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do. It keeps multiplying and growing, but it doesn't know what it's supposed to be doing. Yeah. And so it just bleeds resources out of the body and crowds out organs that have purpose. But I always think that's interesting about biologically. When a cell doesn't know its purpose, it isn't evil. It isn't meaning to do harm, but it still does harm to the body just because it just grows without purpose.
Yeah.
I don't know. You want to wrap biology into spirituality, we can do that some other time. But I just thought about that when that word got spoken. When he said cancer, I thought, man, all it is a living thing that doesn't know its purpose.
Yeah. And again, and maybe that's something for, we need to be writing this down. That's something for another day. This notion or idea, is there a separation between spirituality and biology? Is it all one and the same?
And math. Don't get me started on math and calculus. But
Yeah. They say math is the universe and math is God or the universe's language.
Because even in math, you get into calculus, there's answers you never
get
to.
We got to do something. And my man, Mastered, if you're out there, we got to get into some like sacred geometry stuff.
I'm a just spectate on that, man. I got to listen because that's outside my head.
I mean, I'm just a novice. I'm not an expert by any means, but I got some dope stuff at the crib just on geometry, sacred geometry, the Fibonacci sequence, like the numbers of the universe.
I thought it was a pizza. Okay. Yeah. that tells you my extent of my knowledge. I thought it sounded delicious, but it's actually deep knowledge.
Nah. Everybody out there, if not next show, maybe in a couple of shows, we're going to do some, let's dig into some sacred geometry stuff, God's math, sacred geometry, universal numbers, like the Fibonacci sequence, like we can dig into, and I'll bring some stuff and we can sift through, some, like, is there order, is there some sort of order to the universe, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, we up on an hour, man. Definitely.
Malik, you get first call next time, man. Sorry we lost. If I'm still saying your name wrong, when you call in next time, you can tell me. But, we'll try and get you next time. Sorry we couldn't get you on.
Yeah. So the hour is up. And again, Pastor Joe's gonna close us out. But again, this is Keelan Hinton. I want to thank everybody. Look, you could have been anywhere today, but you decided to hang out with us for a few minutes. And the thing about these conversations, it's important that everyone know that this is all organic. And if you hear us stumbling and fumbling and going back and correcting ourselves and pausing, it's because we love the beauty of asking questions and seeing, you know, what knowledge and what beauty can come out of sort of organized chaos.
What
beautiful thoughts and ideas can come out of an organic conversation. So those, again, peace and blessings to you all. I just want to say peace and blessings to you all that are out there listening. You know, if you would like to participate in the show, those of you who would like to participate, please call in. You can send us, if you have topics for the show, you can send us those topics or suggestions or comments at synergykhjh@gmail.com. synergykhjh@gmail.com. Again, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can come in and the three of us or the four of us can have a conversation. If you know something about sacred geometry or we kicked around the idea of talking about astral theology at some point or another.
Astral theology, humanism. A couple different things.
Yeah. So we got a lot of dope topics that we're just interested in just sort of teasing apart. And again, we're just all out here just looking for, as we said, you know, my motto is when you're looking for the truth. Any and everything has to be a possibility. So we are just in a space and a place that we're not afraid to test our beliefs. And we want to give everybody else's perspectives and ideas integrity. And so, you know, bring your ideas. And again, this show, if you go to Mahogany Love and Light, that's the podcast, Mahogany Love and Light. podbean.com. There are three shows there. You'll see Love Line show that I used to do on Sundays, which I won't do this Sunday because the Super Bowl is on. Then there's Brother to Brother that I do with Dr. Chapman, that we just sort of talk about racial issues, community issues, issues with family. And then there is Synergy, and myself and Joe, we do Synergy together every Friday, usually around 11 o'clock. Anywhere between 11 and 11:30 we'll start, depending upon what our schedules are. And again, this show is about religion and spirituality and consciousness. So not just boxed into one religious perspective, but we want to explore all of these perspectives, yeah. Find commonalities amongst them, find what's different, and hopefully we can stumble upon and make some friends and find something new. So again, I just want to say peace and blessings to you all out there. And I'm going to actually type in the email in the chat box. Again, it's synergykhjh@gmail.com, and I'll type it into the text box as well so those of you can see it. And peace and blessings to you, and Joe will take us out.
Again, thank you all for being with us today, for being a part of the conversation. I do want to let you know that we have received some of your input and questions from past shows. We did get those. Thank you for sharing those. We will work those into conversations and discussions in future shows. I'll make sure you know we are getting the answers, the input and the questions you're giving us, and we will make sure to give those time in future shows. I just want to point out, being a pastor, the things that we share and discuss on the show are not meant to be representative of any given denomination or any congregation or any church institution. Just two people talking through our own spiritual ideas and questions. Thank you for being with us. I look forward to you being with us for the next conversation. God bless.
Now I can sing you the storyline, and if you like my story, fine. But ain't none of the glory mine. See, my life was a lonely one, and I was their mama's only son. With no idea I'm become. And I didn't have long to know that you don't have to be grown to go. I could have died so long before. Then I finally saw the sign, and I made it on down the line, one step at a time. I feel better, I can smile at it now. I feel better, oh, better. And even a little is still better. Oh, have mercy on me. Oh, it's probably plain to see that I got a whole lot of pain in me, and it will always remain in me. So cold, it's a crying shame. Yeah, here I am trying again, 'cause I refuse to die in vain. The circumstances put soul in me, and there ain't no holding me. I've got a heart made of gold in me. Can you believe this is where I've been? And when adversity comes again, I'll deal with it then. I feel better, I can laugh at it now. I feel better, oh, better. And even a little is still better. Oh, have mercy on me. I